Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. With our biggest sale ever, furnaces from $39 a month, furnace and air conditioning combos from $59 a month, plus 72 months interest-free financing and up to a $4,000 system rebate. Four Seasons guaranteed to beat any competitor's price by up to $1,000 guaranteed. So call today for your free in-home estimate and same-day installation.
For all the right reasons, call it 664 Seasons.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Time now for Mego and Shime on WEEI.
What they did was ship a guy who might create a little noise out to Dallas. And the reason I say noise is because Joe Milton's got a huge arm. He has been a fascination of New England reporters and New England fans at training camp. Everyone has seen all the different things he can do, throw the ball 60 yards downfield and all of that. It was ship a guy who might create a little noise out to Dallas. And the reason I say noise is because Joe Milton's got a huge arm. He has been a fascination of New England reporters and New England fans at training camp. Everyone has seen all the different things he can do, throw the ball 60 yards downfield and all of that. Drake May is the starter.
Is this going to be your intro song at your wedding reception? Like, now introducing Mr. and Mrs. Shine.
I don't know if that'll be allowed. I don't think Lauren loves Creed the way I love Creed.
Okay.
But this will definitely get played during the reception.
Do y'all have your first dance song?
No.
You haven't? Have you talked about it?
We've discussed it, yeah.
Okay.
Should go with this one.
It's a good one. If I'm going to go with the first dance song, though, like...
What do you mean, if you're going to?
No.
You
by Creed.
Have to do
I mean, by Creed.
Okay.
I would probably look more at, like, they have a song called... I want to say it's Keep On Dancing, or Keep Dancing. That one's probably a little bit better. With Arms Wide Open is the other slow, more ballady song, but that's about having a son, so I don't know.
I was going to say, that's more about babies.
Yeah. So, I would have to look through the catalog, but
this song
is just a banger. It gets me going. There's very few songs, not very few, there's a handful of songs in life that get me going beyond just get adrenaline pumping through my body.
Do you have any songs like the Seinfeld episode where he can't listen to, like, there's one song that makes him too emotional in the car, the guy that Elaine's dating. Do you know what I'm talking about? And she tries to make hers, like, witchy woman. And he's like, no.
No.
Okay.
I don't. I'm sorry.
I will say, a former host friend of mine who was on this program, we both agreed that we could not listen to Rocket Man by Elton John.
Okay.
Because it's too emotional.
Interesting. Too emotional. I don't know if there's a song that I get too emotional. OAR's I Feel Home. I get very emotional.
What?
Yeah. I Feel Home. Oh, that song.
It's literally about my home, and I don't feel emotional about it.
Yeah. Well, it means a lot to me. It's a great
song.
Just
reminds me of high school.
Well.
Drinking in somebody's basement.
Are you an OAR fan?
I mean, I was when I was 17.
Oh, all right. Well, you know.
These days, I'm like, oh, what are we going to talk about Dispatch next?
I do love Dispatch. The General, Two
you,
Coins.
Dude, you listen to The General, it'll change your world.
That's a great song.
Make you see
excellent
life
artistry.
Completely differently.
Yeah, you know. Just, hey, don't hate. I'm probably going to see OAR at least once this summer, maybe twice.
I am being a hater. Enjoy what you enjoy. I don't know the last time I listened to OAR.
Seeing OAR do a live set in like a misty rain in Ocean City, Maryland on the beach was one of the great experiences of my life. It's tremendous.
I'm not going to knock that. Yeah, I'm glad that you had that for
thank
you.
Thank you. You know, it means I'm going to hold on to that one forever. 617-779-7937. If you had a moment where music just touched you to the soul, you know, you can tell us all about it. But for now, let's get into this Joe Milton trade, Mego, because this is another thing that gets my blood boiling in a different manner, if you will, because people have, like Ken Laird, tell you that Joe Milton is better than Cam Ward. I don't get it. I don't understand it. It might be the craziest take I've ever heard in my life. And yet here we stand. I think we ran a poll on the Greg Hill Show Friday. Do you think the Joe Milton trade was a good trade? Yes or no? And it was like 65% no. I don't understand it. It doesn't make sense to me. Can you make any sense of this this love for Joe Milton?
So you and I are very closely aligned on this. I think that the return that they got back for Joe Milton, which was kind of a wash because they had to send a seventh rounder out and they got back a fifth rounder. So you could say they jumped around from where they drafted him. But even sending out a meaningless seventh rounder, I feel like we're getting very picky here about what's an upgrade or not. I think this says a lot more about Mike Vrabel than it does about Drake May.
Okay.
Because there was an article from Ben Volen 2 days ago at this point where he was talking about, hey, I have a league source that May's family wasn't thrilled when Joe Milton III was
that source in the ticket office?
Was drafted. I believe that. I believe that his family didn't love it. Like, whose family would? Only one quarterback can play on the field. So if somebody else is in your class and is also drafted, I believe that a natural reaction for someone from your family would go, that's not ideal. I don't love that for my kid or my brother or whatever.
Yep.
I don't know what the source was. But the other part of it, this idea that there was any kind of real competition between Drake and Joe, there was not that last year.
There's
Joe was
been.
On scout team the entire year.
He was active
nobody
for three
thought,
games.
Nobody except for, no, actually, nobody thought that Joe Milton was competing for a spot with Drake May, including Joe Milton, which is why he wanted to leave. And the way that I, as we get further and further away from the return on investment, which isn't great, but whatever, the way that I look at it is this is a guy who didn't want to be here. And I think Mike Vrabel, when we hear Ian Rappaport talk about possible noise in the quarterback room, it's Mike Vrabel's way of being, hey, if you're not with the program, we don't have room for mess here. And I'm not saying like Joe Milton stepped out of line or was a problem or anything like that, but he didn't want to be here. He wanted to go somewhere where he could compete. And so if you don't want to be here or you have a different idea about something, I think it's Vrabel's way of being like, fine, get out. And I think that's doubled down by the increased information that we're getting about Steph Diggs' contract. I really like Steph Diggs.
Yep.
I really am excited about what I think he can bring to the field and the locker room. No secret that he's a fiery personality and it has had conflicts with his teammates in front of cameras before. The way that they structured that contract, it's basically like if the injury is not working out and it's a problem, you're out.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way that Vrabel is setting all this up. So maybe you think that Joe Milton has this exceedingly high ceiling that he's only brushed his fingertips against, and you're disappointed because you think he's going to be this other six-round miracle like you had 25-plus years ago. I just don't think that. I think you basically saw the best out of him against backups in the preseason and in week 18. And that's fine. And you sold when you could sell. And more importantly, Vrabel looks at it and goes, no mess. I don't want mess. Let's just get everybody going in the same direction.
And I think that's one of the things, like everybody kind of is, I feel like a lot of people are pointing fingers at Drake May. Like he like went to Mike Vrabel and was like, I don't want Joe Milton here. Whereas I think it was more like if Drake May said anything, it was because Vrabel asked him and was like, has he been making noise like this the whole time? Like that he should be competing for the starting job and he wants this and he wants that. Like that, if Drake May said anything, to me that's what it was. And I think you're right. Like I think Vrabel looked at him and goes, dude, like here's the deal. Here's the hierarchy. Josh Dobbs is our backup. Drake May's our starter. You want to work your ass off as the third quarterback, as the scout team quarterback, and help us out, great. But don't be like saying you should be competing for the starting job. You have to work for this. Like you are not going to be given this like at all. And it seems like to me, Joe Milton felt like he should be competing for things. And he deserved things that he didn't deserve.
Yeah. Remember, and I heard Phil Perry talking about this on Tom Curran's Patriots Talk podcast, referring to the press conference that Mike Vrabel gave where he said, we're taking entitlement out of the building. And was there any kind of sense? I think like a sense of entitlement personally is maybe too strong to describe what was going on with Joe Milton.
Okay.
He's 25 years old.
But it was building towards that.
He thinks that he wants to be somewhere where he can compete. And that's totally his right. And he got what he wanted. There seemingly was only one team that made an offer.
Compete behind a $60 million quarterback.
Yeah, but Dak's injured, you know, all the time. He's going to get a spot.
I mean, he's been injured twice.
There. I don't think it's going in the right direction.
This is the other thing that bugged the crap out of me, too, is all of the people being like, why would it have hurt? And I heard this on Jones and Keefe. I heard Ken say it. Why would it hurt to not just keep Joe Milton around because Drake May's going to get hurt again? He missed a game last year with a concussion. He didn't get hurt. He got hit in the head. He wanted to play. They said no.
See, this is the yelling that I had.
Yeah, this
you
is
don't think
yelling.
That this is yelling?
No, no, no.
You're yelling right now,
I'm
which I
yelling.
Like because you care a lot
yeah,
about this.
I do care a lot.
You're very irritated
I'm
by
dialed.
People who thought that you were getting a third rounder or even a second rounder back for Joe Milton. I understand the rookie contract and that
yep.
people are desperate for quarterbacks and teams are stupid.
Guess what? You can draft another sixth round quarterback that wants to be here and is willing to learn and be the third stringer and not dress on Sundays. Like,
yeah.
you can do that. Because that's still a possibility if you wanted to. But this guy was not worth it.
Patriots fans are just—they're so thirsty for having any kind of bargaining chip. So they thought
so thirsty for quarterbacks. The Michael Bishops.
They thought they had a bigger chip than they did. They thought they had a bigger chip than they did.
Yeah. Anybody who thought you were getting more than a fifth round pick for Joe Milton is insane. Is in clinically insane. You should go check into a hospital if you thought you were going to get a third round pick for Joe Milton. Ken said this morning, "Oh, I bet they could have gotten a third or a fourth round had they waited." No. No,
I don't think so either.
That's never going to happen.
I think that this is probably the best that they were going to get. Because what is he going to do? He's going to show something in joint practices where all of a sudden the Commanders are like, let's have that guy be our backup? I don't think so.
And so 401 question. Yeah, it believes we're a fraud because we won't answer this question. What would have been wrong with Joe Milton putting a little heat on Drake May for the starting job? He wouldn't have been putting any heat on him. That's the difference. He would have been the third string quarterback. He wouldn't dress on Sundays. He wouldn't be getting reps on offense. He would be the scout team quarterback. That's what Joe Milton would have been on this football team. He wouldn't have been putting pressure on anybody. That's why they brought Josh Dobbs in immediately in free agency. It's a guy Mike Vrabel likes, Noah is smart, and Noah is a team guy. So he brings him in, and this is a guy who's going to support Drake May, help him learn, and teach him things about being in the NFL. He doesn't give a rat's ass about Joe Milton. Doesn't. That's why he shipped him out at the first deal he got. There were these Jordan Schultz, and I think Doug Kiatt even said that there were multiple teams that were going to have offers for Joe Milton. Then Burt Breer said, no, no, no. There were multiple teams interested, but the only team that offered anything for Joe Milton was the Dallas Cowboys, and the Patriots took it right away because they didn't want him here. Like, I don't understand what you people don't understand about this. It boggles
my
mind.
Well, I think what people's concern, and I don't think this is legit, but I think some people are concerned that the way it reflects on Drake May is, why do they need to get him out of here so fast? And is that about Drake?
No.
I don't think it is. I think when you're hearing noise, it's less so about directly the quarterback room and the other quarterback who's the starter. Because again, no semblance of competition there last year.
None.
Really none.
Not a single moment was there ever a competition.
I think it's more about the room overall. The locker room.
The culture.
Vrabel's way of doing things.
Bingo.
And if you're going to be committed to that, then you have to be committed across the board. It can't just be the third string quarterback. But I think that was more my takeaway from it at this point.
I totally agree. This to me screamed Joe Milton was a fan of the way Jerod Mayo did things so that he could speak his mind at all times. And he wanted to. He wanted to speak his mind because he wanted to be able to compete for the backup job or the starting job or whatever. And Vrabel was like, that's not how we're doing things here. You can get on board with the program or you can get out. Milton didn't want to get on board with the program, so he got his ass shipped out.
I don't even know if it was like that far as Milton knowing himself that he's not competing. It's not a competition.
No.
Drake's the guy for you.
Yeah,
and it's not
competition.
A competition. So he wants out. He wants to go somewhere else where he feels that he's going to at least have a shot, a spot
start,
a way to compete. And if he stayed around here, he's going to be a guy who's freaking miserable. And that's not somebody that you want in your locker room.
Because, like, everybody, even if you did think Drake May is injury prone because of the one concussion he got last year where he missed
a game.
Well,
it doesn't help that they haven't gotten a left tackle yet.
No, that sure. But, like, even if you think that Drake May is injury prone, guess what? If Drake May got injured, Joe Milton's not starting a game. It's going to be Josh Dobbs. Mm-hmm. Like, there was never going to be a point in time where Joe Milton was going to start a game where you'd ever see him again. So they sold him at the absolute peak of what you could sell him at anyways. He saw him in one game, in a meaningless game, against a team that didn't want to win. He's a sixth-round quarterback. This is how... It's another thing I don't think people quite understand is how the NFL treats late-round picks. Bill Belichick was the perfect example of this. Like, if you're look at Julian Edelman. Because Edelman was a seventh-round pick, he was never going to pay Edelman at the top of any market in terms of receiver money. Never. Because of where you were drafted. It's the same thing with every other player across every team across the league.
Well,
the economics of football.
A little different with, like, Steph Diggs, fifth-rounder.
Yeah, because Steph Diggs actually made himself one of the best players in football with a quarterback that wasn't Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Like, there's going to be exceptions to every rule. Tom Brady, absolutely, an exception.
I think that's more of a Bill Belichick issue, where it was the same thing with Jacoby Myers, who was an undrafted free agent, and he never was able to see him as a number two receiver.
Well, I also think you're seeing it play out in San Francisco, why they're dragging their heels with Brock Purdy so much, because he was drafted in the seventh round. And to them, it's like, oh, I could probably just find another guy in the fifth or sixth round that's going to give me this value that he would have given me without having to pay him $50 million a year.
Are they totally wrong, though?
Yes, probably. Probably wrong. But that's the way NFL teams think. And I don't believe fans recognize the some of the economics when it comes to football front offices. 617-779-7937. We'll continue with the Joe Milton conversation, as well as what really is Elliott Wolf's power level or
what would
strength.
You say it is that you do here?
Yeah, we'll get into all that here. It's Mego and Shime on Boston Sports Original WEEI, but right now Zach is going to get you caught up with what's trending.
WEEI Afternoons with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson. Weekdays 2 to 6. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Red Sox extended their winning streak to 3 with a 13-9 win over the St. Louis Cardinals in yesterday's Fenway opener. They're back to .500 on the year with the win. They were propelled by back-to-back home runs from Trevor Story and Willier Abreu. As a part of a 5-run first inning, Alex Bregman in his Fenway debut went 2-for-4, and here's what he had to say about that crowd after the game.
Obviously the energy was in the ballpark. It was a lot of fun to be out there playing, and especially after a long road trip, not being here for a while and then coming back and feeling that energy, it brought all of us into the game really nicely, and looking forward to continuing it.
Game 2 of that series goes down today. Weather permitting, Richard Fitz will take the mound opposite Andre Pallante for St. Louis. You can hear coverage of that one right here on WEEI and across the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Joe Weil will get you started on the Mass Mutual pregame show at 3:10. Then Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks with the call of the game. First pitch at 4:10. Celtics beat the Phoenix Suns 123-103, the final at the Garden last night. Jaylen Brown leading the way with 31 points for the Celtics. They'll have a day off and then host the Washington Wizards tomorrow night. Tip off at 6. Bruins back in action tonight, looking to snap that 10-game losing streak. They'll host the Carolina Hurricanes with a loss tonight, and they'll tie the 1924-25 team for the longest losing streak in franchise history. Bees and Canes puck drop from the Garden at 7. In other NHL news, Washington Capitals winger Alex Ovechkin tied Wayne Gretzky's all-time goals record last night. He scored his 893rd and 894th career goals. He'll have a chance to break Gretzky's record tomorrow when the Capitals take on the Islanders. Finally, for just the second time ever, the Final Four consists of all number one seeds. Those games get underway tonight in the Alamo Dome. First, Florida takes on top overall seed Auburn at 6:09. Then Duke will face Houston at 8:49. Remember, you can hear Westwood One's coverage of those games right here on WEEI after the conclusion of Red Sox coverage. Winners, of course, will fight for a national championship on Monday night. My name is Zach Cohen. That's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More Mego and Shime coming up after this.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Chicago, the grudge matches on the gridirons might be gone, but get ready to hit the ball and touch them all at your local Chevy dealer, where you'll find the real MVPs of SUVs. If you're thinking about rounding third and heading for home in a new Chevy, you're not alone. The right vehicle makes all the difference when it comes to safety, confidence, and comfort on the road. You saw the Chevy lineup at the auto show. Now it's time to take the next step and banner up. Need the power and durability of a Silverado? The all-weather confidence of an Equinox or Blazer? The spacious comfort of a Traverse, Tahoe, or Suburban? Or the sporty city-friendly Trax? Your local Chevy dealer has exactly what you need to win the game like a pro. So don't wait. Head to ChevyDriveChicago.com today. Browse the newest models, special offers, locate the nearest dealer, and start shopping online. Things are warming up out there, and you need a vehicle you can trust. Find yours now at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Chevy. Together, let's drive.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Mego and Shime on WEEI.
If I'm Elliot Wolf, I'm looking at, my God, every single guy that I was involved in bringing in is getting shipped out immediately before we even have our first OTA. I feel he's on a lot thinner ice than we imagine. This draft, Phil, has to go smooth and correct because he has absolutely nothing on his resume that makes you think he should be closer to the war room than the Bass Pro Shop. He should be just text Elliot if you have anything you want to know. Do not be in the room giving any advice at all because everything you touch turns to bust.
Scathing words from our guy, Tony Curran.
So good.
I'm Elliot Wolf. Mego, do you agree with him? Do you think yes. Elliot Wolf is on thin ice?
Well, I was surprised he went out that far. I loved it. Vintage Tom E, but him saying he should be closer to Bass Pro Shops than in the war room at the draft.
I hope that
he's not wrong, dude. Look back at the drafts, even when it was Belichick's show and we were all talking about how Belichick was terrible at drafting. Remember the Mac Jones draft when
Elliot
he's
Wolf
sitting
was
in the
part
room,
of that.
Looking around, Elliot, you go with this? Hey, you go with this? You go with this? Like, he's been there throughout the duration, and it's not getting better. And don't give me the Drake May pick, because it was sitting there, and if Jaden Daniels had been there and the Commanders took Drake May, he would have taken Jaden Daniels.
Yep.
It wasn't about
the
player.
Taking the quarterback.
It was about one of those two quarterbacks that was going to be there, and they're both good.
Yep.
So it was a no-lose situation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
That doesn't prove anything.
I totally 100% agree, because every other draft pick outside of Drake May has been terrible. Every single one of them. And as you said, like Drake May just fell in his lap. And it's just, I was really mad because I don't think he should still even be here. And so, like, to hear that from Tommy Curran, it makes me even a little bit more angry. Like, then why is he still here? If he's so bad and, like, maybe he should be more in the Bass Pro Shop than in the war room, like, then why? What is he doing? And I can only think that he has, like, it's just... like, he's tight with the crafts, I guess. Like,
he's got to have some relationship where they don't want to sever it right now.
But so then my issue is that come draft day, even if it's not a first, even if Mike Vrabel has the say on the first round pick and the second round pick, like if he gets a say, if Wolf gets a say on any of these late round picks, you might as well just throw him in the trash. Like, that's kind of what I'm worried about. Like, what's the point?
Again, Seinfeld, you do the Costanza thing where you go against his instincts.
Yes, you go complete opposite. Today I'm going turkey on rye. Like, you have to go completely against whatever he tells you to do with that fifth round pick you just got for Joe Milton. Because, well, honestly, like, it's just,
Why is he here?
I don't know.
Why is he here?
Is it because he's the son of Ron Wolf? Is that it?
I don't know.
Is it
but
nepotism?
It's clear that when Rabel came in, he brought Ryan Cowden here. So yep. Why is Cowden here?
Because it's a guy Vrabel trusts, and he should be in charge.
Somebody to be on the scouting side with Vrabel.
Yep.
He brought Stretch here to be either his Ernie Adams or Bears or some
whatever
combination of that. Like, that is the brain trust for all due purposes. Like, when we look over there, how do you think that anybody else is handling that? We've been told so many times, okay, we heard from Vrabel a couple weeks ago when he was saying, oh, I'm going to have my coaches. This is before free agency.
I
have my coaches. They're going to like certain kind of guys. I'm going to have my scouts. They're going to like, you know, they have their attributes that they like. And everybody's going to fight it out. And then we're going to figure out who's the best for the Patriots. No mention of Elliott Wolf at all.
Because as we've said on this program, he's the king of scouts now. He's just a scout master.
Wolf.
Scoutmaster Wolf.
And then you hear sitting down with Kay Adams. Even Elliott Wolf is like, well, who the coaches think fits best? It's like, what is your job, dude? What are you doing?
Do you
just carry the card from one room to the other?
The only guesses I have is he's like tight with the crafts, or two, it's that because it's an entirely new regime, they are somewhat behind on the entire scouting process that normally takes the entire year.
Okay.
And so they're basically keeping Elliott around for the database he has accrued so far on these prospects.
To make sure the scouts walk in like single file line.
Well, so just to make sure that you have all of the information. And then as soon as the draft's over, you can send him on his merry way.
Do you think that Kraft set the stage to fire him if they miss the playoffs in his availability earlier in the week?
No, I think he's... I don't think he's tied to the playoffs. I think he's tied to the draft class more, at least in my opinion. Where do you stand?
I think it's all about personnel. And Robert Kraft declaring the playoffs as a successful season for the Patriots is an entirely other conversation where, to me, that's just Robert Kraft going rogue and trying to drum up excitement for the team, saying, we got a coach with a lot of experience now. We got a quarterback going into his second season. We're bringing in some free agents who are real players compared to last year. But when it comes to Elliott Wolf, I just have to think that there's some kind of personal relationship that he has with Jonathan Kraft or Robert Kraft, where the Krafts are going, we need to get back to a little bit of how it was with Bill.
Yep.
We are bringing Vrabel, and we want him to build his program. But we also don't want to make the mistake of going all the way back to the entire way of Bill doing things, because we lost total control. And it got worse but it was still, let's not forget that it was bad with Bill at the end, even before the Mayo era.
Yeah, I think what they need to realize, though, is that this is not Bill. Like, it's already so much different than Bill in that, like, Vrabel doesn't have his fingers, like his tentacles in everything. Like,
isn't that what we're saying he does, though?
No, I think he has the final say on a lot of things, but I don't think he has his... I think that's the reason why he brings in Cowden and why he has Stretch, so that it's a unified effort and not just a one guy's effort.
But those are Vrabel guys. So
sure.
I think it's this idea of concentration of power under one big honcho.
Okay,
one big hoss, as the Midday Show would say, in Vrabel.
So it's not even
that's where everything trickles down from.
Okay, so you think that when the Krafts want a collaborative effort, it's not just the entire organization is collaborative, it's that the Krafts want to be collaborative with whoever is in charge.
Yes.
Got it, okay.
A collaborative effort under one big hoss, being Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, but...
Hoss Vrabel.
And so they're scared that Vrabel won't collaborate with them, meaning Robert and Jonathan.
Yeah, I think that there's some of this. I think
here.
There's some semblance of this of, well, the scouting department, as you said, wasn't completely broken.
Yep.
And the other side of this is how much you think that Robin Glazer actually played in terms of what role she played in terms of deciding on free agents. I wouldn't really factor her into the draft, but
no,
some of these contracts and budget things. So are they saying maybe it will be different with Elliott with Robin Glazer gone? I don't know, but I'm just trying to come up with any reason that he's still here after it's been as dreadful as it's been.
Yeah, we've seen it a couple times in the past, not very often, but there are times where a GM hangs around specifically because of all the work that's gotten done for the draft, and then a coach gets hired, and then the end of next season, or like somewhere along the line, the GM just gets canned, and they bring in a new GM who can start doing more work for the next year.
And I think that's a little, look, Tommy is super tight end down there still, and so I wonder when he says Elliot Wolf is on a lot, seems to be on a lot thinner ice than any of us think. That's something to pay attention to.
Absolutely.
If you're somebody who's very frustrated with the way that the drafting has gone and wondering what's going to be different, that's the kind of thing that you pay attention to.
Because I think there's a world where this team wins 10 games and Elliot Wolf still gets fired.
Hmm. Yeah, or they just say that he's leaving of his own accord for some other job.
A mutual parting of ways, like the Red Sox did with Alex Cora at one point.
A Gwyneth Paltrow conscious uncomfortably.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what it'll be like.
Yeah, and so I just... Because, again, I don't think he really brings much to the table. I don't think anything he does is very valuable at all. It is now the Mike Vrabel show and his guys. And eventually Cowden's just going to take Wolf's job, and that's how it's going to be.
Which, for the record, makes me much more optimistic.
Yeah. You need to have – that's the thing about football franchises. You need to have one unified vision, right? Everybody needs to be on the – same page. Everybody needs to be moving in the same direction. When everybody's moving in different directions and like nobody is kind of thinking the same way, that's when chaos happens. That's why teams are bad.
Yeah.
Let's go to Marcus in Roxbury. Wants to talk about the Pats. What's up, Marcus? Marcus. Yo.
Bummer, Marcus. Right.
Well, we'll throw Marcus back on hold. See if we can get him there, but. Ultimately, I'm excited about the future of this Patriots team, especially knowing that Wolf is on his last leg. That makes me happier because I feel like this team, they have some pieces. They need to just continue assembling things the right way. They need to continue allowing Mike Vrabel to make these decisions, allowing Mike Vrabel to pick guys that he wants. I don't want it to always just be guys that Vrabel has coached before.
Right.
Like you want guys like the Milton Williamses of the world to continue to come in, but to continue building a team with an identity is a good thing.
Yeah. And I do think that it just underscores we all know the importance of this draft, but the draft after that and the draft after that, they've got to be picking up some premium players because that's the difference. Is it's not like they haven't hit on some guys, thinking primarily of Christian Gonzalez outside of Drake May, but they have to hit these premium positions that they're not going to get in free agency for the most part.
All right, Marcus seems to be ready. Marcus, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, just wanted to say I really enjoy you guys on Saturday. Never lose this energy.
Appreciate you.
I have a quick question. As a football fan, am I wrong to like want to see more out of Drake May, or do I just take your word that he's the next Josh Allen in Mego? A little while back, you had posed the question to Shyman. You said, well, if Drake May was on the Commanders, they probably would go to the championship game too. But I think that diminishes the hard work that Jaden Daniels put in. So I just wanted to get that out there and tell you guys, keep up the good work, man.
Appreciate it, Marcus. Appreciate it, Marcus. Thanks so much for the call.
I don't know if I said that. Maybe was a take I had. I think I said they'd be in the playoffs.
We definitely discussed it, and I think we were both kind of like they would still be a good football team. They would have been. They wouldn't. I don't think they would have been in the NFC Championship game.
No, I think they would have been in the playoffs.
And Marcus, like, look, I'm the biggest Drake May fanboy there is. I won't deny that, and I will tell you, I think he's going to be really, really good. I don't have any doubts about that.
Where's
but
the butt?
No, but he's allowed, Marcus is allowed to have doubts. Like, I'm okay with, I understand the people that aren't ready to, you know, crown him the next coming. I get it. That's fine. You can wait and be patient and see more and then make your decision. That's fine. I think he's going to be that. Like, I have the utmost confidence in the fact that I think he's going to be a really talented quarterback. But I'm not going to tell you you're an idiot for being like, I just want to wait and see a little bit more. I get it.
He still needs some polishing, and that's totally fair to say.
I get
He's got to work on the turnover margin, and that's going to be the biggest thing next season is not just the taking the step forward of, is Drake May going to win you games? Like, is he going to do the thing that Mac Jones really couldn't do, which is lead these comeback drives and win the game, not just take you to overtime?
Yep.
but also is he not going to lose games for you? Because he's going to lose a game for you next season. There's going to be a point where it's going to be a very close game and the ball is going to be in his hands and something's going to happen. Maybe it won't even be entirely his fault. Maybe it'll be more on the receiver goofing up a catch and giving the ball up or something. But that play is going to lose you a game and you're going to start looking at yourself and trying to balance out what is the upside of this guy versus the turnovers. And I think that's the biggest change that he has to make in his sophomore year.
Yeah, I think it was kind of all in one microcosm in that Tennessee Titans game, right? Where he leads that game-tying drive at the end of the fourth quarter, makes the insane play to score the touchdown to tie the game and go into overtime. But then in overtime, they hold him to three, they get the ball, and he throws the back-breaking pick. Like, right. I get it. Like, you kind of saw everything all in one game. The ability to lead down late in the game, but then also the mistakes that can be made by a young quarterback. But I think he will show you more this year, and I hope that he takes a massive step forward. 617-779-7937. It's Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI.
Now, more of Mego and Shime on WEEI.
Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Been talking Pats this whole hour. And we'll continue with a little bit of draft talk here to end the show before Brad Foe takes the stage. Mego, I released my most recent mock draft. I believe the New England Patriots won't even get a chance to decide or even get a chance at Travis Hunter or Abdul Carter at this point.
Looking that way.
It seems like a lot of mock drafts are trending in that direction. Do you feel like the Patriots are going to have a shot at either of them with the fourth pick in the upcoming NFL draft?
I don't. I'm getting nervous, especially when you had the Colorado Pro Day yesterday and there was not a huge Patriots presence there for Travis Hunter.
Which is interesting because I am aware that the Patriots, or at least the head coach, really likes Travis Hunter.
I'm just trying to read the tea leaves.
Yep, I'm with you.
Which seem to indicate, if I had to guess what they're doing today, it's Will Campbell at four. They seem enamored with Will Campbell, and there's a lot of Will Campbell defenders who are on the fringes of the Patriots, such as Dante Scarnecchia, saying it's about technique, it's not about the arm length.
The tape is there. I'll be honest, like, if you're just going by his tape and you completely throw out the measurements, then like Will Campbell is a top five draft pick. He is. He was excellent at LSU. He's really, really talented. It's just, you know, then all of us analytics and hardos, just draft hardos, are like, well, his arms are too short. And that's why he is falling the way he is.
I think what scares me about the Will Campbell piece of it is that they've said they're drafting best player available. You also need to concentrate, as I said before, on the premium positions because you've just been whiffing on them so terribly in the draft over the last decade outside of your quarterback. And with Will Campbell, I just don't want you to get into an Isaiah Wynn situation. I just don't want you to get into a situation where it's somebody who's truly a guard being forced into a tackle spot, and that leads to frustrations down the line. And on top of that, then you're missing out on maybe a day two person that, like Josh Connerly Jr. or Ozzie Trapillo, who could maybe be a longtime player for you. I don't know.
Is there a direction you'd rather them go at four then? Like, if assuming that you could get one of those guys later in the draft that are more suited to play tackle, at least lengthwise, is there a different guy you would rather them take it for?
That's where it gets really complicated because it still goes back to the availability of where the quarterbacks may be. Because if you want a trade back partner, you've got to find the partner. And again, this draft is so weird where it just looks overall in the high rounds less talented than last year's draft and the draft before it.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of depth to this draft, and I think you can get good players in the middle rounds. But you're right, there's not as much top-end talent, I would say, in this draft compared to the last few. And so that's kind of the issue you run into, right? Like, you find yourself at four. If Carter and Hunter are off the board like we believe they are, you're then looking at, okay, I take Will Campbell. He has short arms, but the tape's really good. Mason Graham is a somewhat undersized interior defensive lineman, but again, tape's pretty good. Do I go pure right tackle at Armand Membu, hope he can flip to left tackle, or we can kick Morgan Moses to left tackle? Or do I go like just truly best player available and take Ashton Gentry at four?
I don't think that's the right move. I know that people are excited about that, but it's not a premium position.
I agree.
And
it's definitely not
just
a premium
you're
position.
You're just really, you need help everywhere. You need elite talent everywhere. But you got to solve your problems first. Yeah. I just don't think that that's the right move. I do think that there's a very real way to look at this draft and the first round and say, where would these guys be in last year's first round? And not just because of the complete flood of quarterbacks yep. that were in that draft, but even with guys like Joe Alt, who if Joe Alt was sitting
in this
at
draft, he would go number four with a bullet.
You would be, and you would feel great about it.
I would feel amazing.
This is serendipitous that we get our left tackle of the future with this blue chipper here.
Yep.
It just doesn't feel that way with the tackles that are available in the first round.
Yeah, like looking at last year's tackle class, last year's class was historically good, but there are at least three, maybe four tackles I would have taken ahead of Will Campbell, right? Like it's Joe Alt with just easy money. Olufoshanu with the Jets. Like I would have taken him before Will Campbell. Talis Fuanga with the New Orleans Saints. I would have taken him. And I would have taken probably Troy Fatanu for the Steelers before I would have taken Will Campbell. Again, another guy with length questions, but just I think a better player. And so there's four guys right there that I'm looking at, and that's not counting JC Latham, who had a good year with the Titans and stuff like that. So it's really hard to be happy with Will Campbell at four, but at the same time I don't know that you're gonna have a trade partner to go down.
Exactly, and that's where I go, I'm just kind of bracing myself from everything that I'm hearing that they're saying out there. I think it's looking increasingly like Will Campbell, and maybe you just have to really hit on two guys in those middle rounds because you have so many picks this year, because you've struggled in the draft so much. It's not just about hitting that number four pick and hopefully making him work as a tackle or if Carter or Travis Hunter falls to you, but also making hay in the rest of the draft because you really need it.
I would say one last thing for you. The name I would just keep an eye on here as we get closer and closer to the draft. Jalen Walker, the edge player out of Georgia, seems to be gaining some steam. I think Burt Breer has thrown his name out now. I just keep an eye on it. If you can't get Abdul Carter, maybe they go with the second best pass rusher they can find. It's been Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Red Sox baseball at 4:10 first pitch against the Cardinals over at Fenway Park. But before that, Rob Bradford takes the stage here on WEEI. Me and Mego will be back with you next Saturday. Keep it locked right here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. See ya.